what I'm going to be talking about is related to quantum impurity models, but they're, as I hope to at least give you some motivation, that they're related nonetheless to the main topic of the conference, which is quantum phase transitions. So what I'm going to be talking about is work that I've done with my postdoc Matt Glossop on the Bose-Fermi-Kondo model. This is an exotic quantum impurity problem that maps, that couples a local impurity both to fermionic and bosonic baths. And this is of current interest because this model enters the extended dynamical mean field treatment of the Kondo lattice. There's some controversy about previous solutions of this model in the extended dynamical mean field theory. There's different schools of thought as to whether or not a certain sort of local critical point exists. And this partly comes about because the impurity solver has not been reliable. So what I'm going to be talking about today, I would like to have been able to give you the full story and tell you what the story is for the lattice. But right now, we're still a few months away from that. What we're doing now is we've shown that the quantum impurity solver works. And I want to tell you about the properties of the Bose-Fermi-Kondo model today. And then hopefully, within a few months, as I said, we'll have decisive results for the extended dynamical mean field theory, the self-consistent embedding of this quantum impurity model. So let me just start by pointing out this problem lies in a broader class of quantum impurity models which have local or boundary phase, quantum phase transitions. So impurities coupled to non-interacting bands can undergo quantum phase transitions. These belong to various sorts. When coupled purely to fermionic bands, then you're sitting in the class of Kondo-type models, and there the standard Kondo effect can be suppressed by various phenomena, such as a depression in the density of states near the Fermi energy, or the competition between multiple bands, such as in the two-channel Kondo problem, where band 1 and band 2 are both trying to grab hold of the impurity and screen it out. And at equal couplings, you get a non-Fermi liquid behavior. And also, you can have the sort of competition between the RKKY and Kondo-type physics in multiple impurity models. If you just have bosonic baths, then you're in the famous quantum distributive two-level system problem, the spin boson model. And so there, for strong coupling to a bosonic band, you can localize a two-level system in one of its wells. You suppress the tunneling between the wells. Then finally, the problems that have been studied recently, have come interest recently, are the ones where you have both fermionic and bosonic baths. And here you combine the two sort of phenomena from the Kondo model and the two-level system type problem. So now you have competition between Kondo screening on one hand and the localization transition of the bosons on the other. So what I'm going to be talking about today is primarily this last type of model, this Bose-Fermi-Kondo model. So let me just describe what it is, set out some nomenclature. So we have a spin 1/2, which is coupled both to a conduction band and a set of bosonic baths. And in the most general form, we're going to have three baths, each corresponding to x, y, and z directions. Basically, they're going to correspond to magnetic fluctuations along those directions. And so, in the most simple isotropic form, the Hamiltonian has two parts. It has it's a sum of a Kondo-type Hamiltonian, the exchange interaction between the local moment and the electron spin at the impurity site. Then over here we have a special case of the spin boson problem, where we have the coupling of the local spin to the displacement of the bosonic baths at the impurity site. And so G and S are the two couplings which are going to compete with each other, as we're going to see. And then, just to complicate things, in various realizations, we're interested in anisotropic versions of this, where you have to split Z and perpendicular components, both of the Gs and the Js. So that's the basic model. Here's the Hamiltonian. The other thing we need to specify is the density of states, both of the conduction band and of the dissipative baths. And the class of problems that are of most interest at the moment are ones in which the density of states of the conduction band is flat and broad and uninteresting, but the bath density of states for the bosons has a power law form described by an exponent S. And S equals 1 corresponds to the standard ohmic case, but we're going to be focusing on more general S, and in particular on S between 0 and 1, so subohmic bands. And so the outcome of this is that we have two parameters we have to worry about, two dimensionless couplings, something like a density state, so the Fermi energy times the Kondo coupling, and the prefactor here, K0 times the bosonic coupling. So those are the things we have to play with. And let me just briefly summarize what was known about this over the last 3 or 4 years. So basically, this has primarily been studied by the epsilon expansion, with expansion around the ohmic bath, so expansion in the bath dimension. And what's generally found is that there's a quantum critical point sitting here. This is a graph with the bosonic coupling versus the fermionic coupling. If you lie above this line here, the Kondo effect wins. If you lie below the line, the bosonic coupling wins out. You go to the localized phase, and here we have a quantum critical point, which has some non-trivial properties, has non-trivial exponents, particularly in the local magnetic response, the response to a magnetic field, which is applied only to the impurity. And one thing to note is that the critical point couplings describing this point, the dimensionless couplings are of order epsilon. So when epsilon becomes large, as is later going to turn out to be the case for the locally critical extended dynamical mean field theory, we're potentially in trouble. And I should also briefly mention that there's a large N multi-channel version of this that's been studied in some detail as well. Okay, so why should we be interested in this? Let me briefly mention one direct potential application of the impurity model in the context of quantum dots, large quantum dots. So here we have a proposal by Karen Lahur that you have a large metallic grain, you have a tunneling junction into a reservoir. So this is, and then you can tune with a gate voltage into the Coulomb blockade regime. But what's the new feature here is that it's possible to have some noise in this gate due to some resistance in the lead here, and so this leads to bosonic fluctuations. This is the bosonic bath, and then the tunneling here allowing for charge fluctuations. That's the fermionic bath, and so this can be mapped onto a Bose-Fermi Kondo model. And there's a prediction there's a costless Thouless transition at some critical value of the resistance, the low frequency value of the impedance there. I'm not going to say any more about that right now, but this is potentially a direct application of the impurity version of the model. What's more relevant here is the fact that the Bose-Fermi Kondo model arises in the extended dynamical mean field theory of the Kondo lattice. And so the Kondo lattice, in all its glory, is mapped in this treatment onto a Bose-Fermi Kondo model. We have a fermionic bath which captures all the one-particle correlations, but there's an attempt to introduce some spatial correlations, basically through an effective magnetic field induced on the central site by the surrounding magnetic moments, and that corresponds to the fluctuating magnetic bars or the Bose fields. And the additional ingredient here is that the band and the bath densities must be found self-consistently. You can't just impose them ad hoc. As I intimated in the introduction, people have tried to solve this problem self-consistently, and they've come up with different results. So the first solution was via the epsilon expansion, and it led to the intriguing notion there might be two types of quantum critical point, including this novel locally critical quantum critical point, which reproduces some of the anomalous features of cerium, copper 6, gold, and terbium, rhodium 2, silicon 2. However, this does correspond to epsilon approaching 1, so it's one can question the validity of the approach here. Subsequently, there's been quantum Monte Carlo studies, but they lead to conflicting opposite conclusions. And one of the troubles here is that quantum Monte Carlo is confined to finite temperatures, and we're interested in really what's happening at zero temperature. And so, on one side, there are people saying that the quantum critical point exists if you go to lower temperatures. On the other side, there are people saying, no, it can't possibly exist. So in order to resolve the controversy, really what's needed is a non-perturbative, reliable, robust T equals zero solution. And as I said, we don't have that yet for the fully self-consistent problem, but what I'm going to tell you about is an approach which can provide such a solution, at least to the impurity problem, will open up the way for the future future solution of the EDMFT problem. So let me, I'm going to go, since I've been flashed the 5 minute card, I'm going to go a little bit quicker. So let me just explain, that in the standard numerical renormalization group method suggested by Wilson, we discretize the conduction band and produce a chain problem in which an impurity couples to a site on the chain, and then there are hoppings which die off along the chain in exponential fashion. This allows us to solve the problem iteratively. That's for fermionic bars. We're going to do the same thing for bosons, and it turns out we can use the same discretization, we introduce the same drop-off, except now this is a faster drop-off because the bath has no negative omega, no negative frequency states. So it means that we have a faster drop-off, but we can still solve this problem by adding more and more sites to the chain. And this discretization was developed independently by Ralph Buller and Matthias Voiter, and they applied it to the spin boson model. To try and do this for both fermions and bosons, you have to find some scheme which takes into account the fact these drop-offs happen at different rates, and so there's a scheme here which I'll skip for. You can come back and ask me about it later if you're interested. Let me just give you some results. So what we have done in our first application of this method is we apply this to what's called the Ising symmetry Bose-Fermi-Collin model, which has just one bosonic bath. So now here's the new form of the interaction bar of the Hamiltonian. We have a single bosonic bath, we have a coupling G to that bath. This makes it computationally the most tractable. It requires the least CPU time. It's also probably the most relevant to cerium copper 6 gold because of the anisotropy in that system. And for convenience, purely for convenience, I'm going to set various cutoffs to 1, and we're going to show results where we fix J, and then we tune the bosonic coupling G and see what happens. And so as a result, yes.
If you could remind me, what is the correlation of the bosonic band? It's an exponent that
defines it? S. Yes. It has a power law form with an exponent S, and you'll see S coming up.
Could you write on the board what precisely what? Omega to the S, what kind of a triangle? I think everyone would appreciate it.
Well, so there's a spectral function which goes like omega to the S. That's
the BB correlation.
Yeah.
Spectral function BB.
Yes.
SS, sorry.
Yeah.
SS is finite.
Oh, sorry.
UU correlation function.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to tune until we find the critical point, some G critical, and we're going to look at the properties around that point. Okay, now I'm into negative time territory, I guess, but anyway. So first of all, we can find a critical coupling. So here's critical coupling G as a function of S. It depends on the condo coupling J. All right, let's go on. So we find the critical point, and then we can define a crossover scale. So above the critical point, there's a quantum critical regime. You drop down in temperature, you cross over to either the bosonic local moment regime or the Kondo regime. There's a crossover exponent which describes that. And the crossover exponent, this is 1 over the crossover exponent versus S. It diverges at S equals 0 and S equals 1, showing this, the model has qualitatively different character outside that range. So S equals 0 to 1 is the range in which we have a fully interacting, non-trivial quantum critical point. Okay, we can calculate also the local magnetic response. That's the thing of greatest interest, especially in the context of the extended dynamical mean field theory for the Kondo lattice. This is the response to a local magnetic field, one which acts only on the impurity site. Here is that quantity plotted versus temperature on the log-log scale. For small g's, that means in the Kondo regime, this quantity saturates at low temperatures. Larger G's, we get a Curie-Weiss behavior showing that the moment is unscreened, and at the critical point we have a power law with an exponent X, and X is equal to S to high accuracy in agreement with epsilon expansion results. But over the entire range where the epsilon expansion is of some dubious validity, I would say. We can also calculate a full range of the critical exponents describing the local magnetic behavior. They all agree with those for the spin boson model, and therefore these two models lie in the same universality class. The exponents in this Ising-like case, for the critical behavior, they make no difference. Yes. The the fixed point is interacting, there's hyperscaling of exponents, there's omega over t scaling. In particular, we can show it t equals 0, the dynamical exponent, x is equal to the omega equals 0 t exponent. So it's consistent with omega over t scaling. We show omega over t scaling in this graph here. I won't go into the details for now, but if you're interested. And finally, we can actually, let me just show you one last graph here. What we can see, what we have here is for the Anderson version of this model, we have the impurity spectral function. What we can view is the Kondo resonance. This item here, this narrow item here, is the Kondo resonance, blown up enormously in the frequency. We have a solid line up here is the Kondo resonance in the Kondo phase. In the bosonic phase, however, we have a little dip feature. The peak here, where the dip is defined, is omega star. That's proportional to T star, the crossover temperature I talked about earlier. So this dip comes in as you get closer and closer to the critical point, and also the value of A of zero rises up. And so in the Fermi, in the Kondo phase, A of zero is pinned at the Fermi liquid value, and you have a resonance of width TK. In the bosonic regime, you have this feature of width omega star, and the value at the zero is rising slowly up. So here we have a Kondo resonance. Here we're destroying the Kondo resonance as we move into the bosonic phase. Okay, so we can. So the conclusion of all this is that we believe, we, after some careful work, we have a very good handle on the impurity problem now in the presence of bosons. And so we can now, we've managed to show that the behavior in this Bose Fermi Condon model is as expected. And so this now opens up the way to proceed to the extended dynamical mean field theory and to try and resolve the controversy surrounding the existence or otherwise of the locally critical quantum point in the Kondo lattice model. Okay, thank you. So we have not calculated the thermodynamic properties yet. That's something which is a little trickier, but that's something we're working on. I think that probably the spin boson model will provide the guidance, and I think Buller and Voiter have calculated the entropy, but I don't remember the result though. But I think since we've shown that these two models are in the same, I think that also the entropy will follow, the residual entropy will follow the same sort of pattern as well. But I can't answer that question right now.
General? Maebashi Miyake and I have recently looked at the problem of a single magnetic impurity Kondo effect in a host which is which has enhanced anti-ferromagnetic correlation. So which is the same problem that you are looking at from the spin boson model. So there were two issues. First was, if you start from a impurity model with interacting fermions, what is the low energy model that you come to? And this is a paper which is in CONMAT. Last Friday, it's already in CONMAT. We discover is that there is one aspect with which the model differs significantly from the boson fermion model, which is that the boson fermion model does not worry about the conversion of the boson back into fermions, which they always have to do because the bosons have come due to interaction between the fermions. Now that makes the model radically, in many ways, different from the spin boson model that you described, single impurity. And then when we go ahead and solve that model in two loop RG, we find a series of unstable fixed points. Which bears some relationship to a multi-channel version of the model that you described, but the stable fixed point is of a completely different nature than in the Bose-Fermi model. This issue is related to this question of, can fermions be eliminated ever in these problems? And maybe later in the in this conference. Friday we discussed this. We can talk about it.
So you're saying that the separation into spin and bosonic baths is artificial, and really they're tied together.
I can illustrate what I mean. You see, what you are considering is here is a mechanical theory, and you are considering a problem in which it is scattering through fermions, and then you are considering another vertex in which it is going into boson. Now this boson itself has come about because of some interaction, some interaction between the fermions, this boson. So which means that you have to always consistently allow this object to turn back to into fermions. And this process makes the problem apparently quite different. And we can say that for sure at the level of the single impurity solution, which we have, what it does to the lattice event.
More questions? How crucial is IDQ?
Sorry, the Ising symmetry is what we've done so far, simply because the more bosons there are, the more hours you have to sit waiting for the jobs to run. So there's nothing. So in principle, this method can be extended to X, Y, and isotropic versions of the model, and that will be done. But I have a graduate student producing a parallelized code to do that, because it's not something you can do on workstations. But no, the model is well defined, it's well studied. But what has been found on the basis of epsilon expansions is that the isotropic fixed point is unstable towards x, y, or Ising symmetry. And so probably for the purposes of understanding the low temperature properties, it's sufficient to study the Ising and the x, y versions. The isotropic is usually split. It's broken down in some way.
Let me ask you, if I'm correctly in the beginning of the approach, you only keep the 2-point correlator of the results, the only information about it. You can imagine that unless you're in very high dimensions, the 4-point correlator also is important. Perhaps even at the same level, you can have an exotic state. Now, is it possible, do you think this energy method can incorporate the 4-point correlation that you could add to this correlation?
Probably not. I mean, anything unless you can recast, unless you can cast in the form of some effective non-interacting bath, the answer is it becomes much more complicated. I mean, the method assumes you have non-interacting baths, you know, with so described by a trivial 2-point, just simply by a 2-point correlator, and that's it. I have nothing intelligent to say. I'm sure it's possible. I can't argue against it. I'm not here to argue the merits of the EDMFT in this particular, you know, in terms of describing the particular physics of the condor lattice in this situation. I'm here really to describe how to do a good job within the EDMFT. It's a much more narrow remit, I realize. When we understand that, then we'll move on beyond that.
Any more questions? Sure. Yes, sir.
My experimental question is, does a bosonic path exist in nature whose frequency dependent is omega to a power less than unity? It seems to be an essential property of this
bath.
What does that correspond to in terms of some bosons we know about?
In terms of the EDMFT, these are not meant to be real bosons. You know, these are effective bosons describing some other phenomenon. As to whether or not one can find some, I don't remember the application, but I mean, I've read papers in the last year or two in which people have claimed to have seen subohmic spectra in some type bath application. I don't remember the precise situation, I'm afraid, but I'll have to get back to you on that one. There is interest in dissipative bars with non-ohmic spectra, but this is, you've got to realize this is an effective bar describing some other phenomenon, which is the, you know, magnetic, the RKKY interactions between the spins and the Kondo lattice. It's not really predicated on the existence of some real bosons with that weird spectrum.
You had this non-monitoring behavior in mu. Is that understood in any way?
Well, so first of all, these results, well, the behavior as S goes to 0 and S goes to 1 reproduces what's obtained in various epsilon expand type expansion. So in the sense, if you believe it, if you're thinking an intuition around the epsilon expansion, yes, it's well understood. We reproduce exactly the asymptotic behavior. Yeah. And I think the fact that it diverges at both ends is telling you there's an upper critical dimension and a lower critical dimension, for the field theory. And so it's probably not surprising that it happens.
Well, if there are no more questions, I would like to, before thanking Kevin in a second, I would like to remind all the speakers to turn in their talks electronically, three clicks or a memory stick, so that all the participants can look at the talks, and then we have more time for discussion. I think that would be very important to have those talks posted very soon, that we can have a look at them maybe tonight, the afternoon, or whatever, and then have some discussion going on. So with that, we're just 3 minutes away from lunch, and I thank Kevin and all the speakers of this morning's session. Thank you.